You're listening to Rendezvous with a Writer with Bobby Jean and Jim Bell, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome to Rendezvous with a Writer, where readers and writers meet,
and story is everything.
We're your hosts tonight, Jim and Bobby Bell. You've just been listening to Hot Texas with Hot Texas Swing Band, our friend Alex Dormont.
Yeah, and we're so excited to have you with us tonight, because we're announcing something new.
Yeah, we got a new segment here.
We have a new segment.
I'm getting used to it.
We're very excited. It's called In the Limelight, and we are featuring a special guest just for that In the Limelight section of the show. And this is allowing us to invite a returning guest, maybe someone who's been on in the past and they have new books, they have new announcements, or maybe somebody that we weren't able to get on because we are fully booked for 2024. And so it allows us to be able to share Rendezvous with a Writer with another writer. And tonight we are kicking off the show. We have two guests with us tonight. W. Michael Farmer joins us for In the Limelight. Hello, Michael. Welcome. And then Joni Franks is joining us as well. And so with us.
Hello.
The entire show. So So welcome to Michael and Joni. Isn't this fun?
It is. Where are you folks joining us from tonight?
Yeah. Michael, where are you?
I'm in Smithfield, Virginia. That's over in the Tidewater corner.
Okay, so you're East Coast.
Yeah.
And Joni, where are you?
I'm coming to you from Crestone, Colorado.
All right. And let's see, we've got LA Talk in Los Angeles. So again, we're coast to coast tonight. And we're just delighted to have everybody with us.
We are.
So let's see, you two have some things in common.
Yes, it is.
And one thing that's coming up for both of you is the Will Rogers Medallion Awards. And this is our fourth Thursday of September, which is our medallion night, right?
What did we start out with? Mystery?
We had mayhem, memoir, murder, and now medallion. So, Michael, give us a moment of you and the Medallion Award. What are you nominated for this year?
Well, I've been nominated for the first Chato novel called Desperate Warrior, and much to my surprise, I was also nominated for a short story called Finding Fortune, which is about the border crisis and how a border vigilante reconciles himself to some of the people that are crossing illegally.
Mm-hmm. And Joni, what about you?
I am nominated in the category of Young Readers Illustrated Fiction for my Corky Tale book, Holly Berry and Mistletoe. Then I am nominated for 2024 Will Rogers Medallion Illustrator of the Year.
Mm-hmm. We have, and you have, we'll be talking with Joni and we're getting into greater depth about her books, but you can see fully illustrated and wonderfully done. And we're just so are you, I'm assuming, will you both be attending so you'll get to see each other there?
I will be. I'll be in Fort Worth.
No, I'm not going to be able to make it. My wife has some health issues and I'm very reluctant to go off and leave her.
Sure. Understandable. So, Michael, we're going to really shift you into the limelight. Joni is staying right here. And Joni, if you have anything you want to share as you're listening to Michael, writer to writer, you just feel that you could jump in. We're going to do a little bio. We're going to tell you a little something about Michael.
Okay. We have a little bit about W. Michael Farmer. Michael's and his friends. Background, combining 15 plus years of research into the 19th century Apache history and culture and his own Southwest living experience, W. Michael Farmer fills his stories with a genuine sense of time and place. His novels have won numerous awards, including 3 Will Rogers Gold and 5 Silver Medallions and New Mexico Arizona Book Awards for adventure, historical fiction, and literary fiction. Michael, please step into the limelight.
Welcome to the spotlight, Michael. So we were mentioning that you were with us a year ago. Maybe first off, just tell us a little bit about what's been going on with you.
Well, I've been on a long writing slog trying to get a couple of novels which are similar in structure to the Chato novels about the Apache Kid. He was known as one of the most fearsome outlaws in the border country around the turn of the last century. People were scared to death of him. What's extraordinary is that up until the army just went nuts because he left his post without permission. He was considered probably the best Apache scout that the army had. Mm-hmm. He had a family with a couple of small kids, but a man had murdered his father, and he and 2 brothers and 2 friends went 40 miles off the reservation and killed that guy. That was a cultural requirement for him. Mm-hmm. He was gone from his post for 5 days. When they held the court martial for him, the jury said death by firing squad. And the General Miles, who was in charge of that court martial, said, "No, that's too stiff. Go back and try a more reasonable sentence." So they came back and said, "Okay, life in prison, mm-hmm. hard work." And Miles said, "No, that's too much. Make it 10 years." And they did, and they sent them all to Alcatraz. Huh. In the meantime, the court-martial proceedings had gone to the secretary of the army, and he thought they were both way out of line, and that the kid and the others had served more than enough time, and they let them out. Then the state of Arizona turned around. It wasn't a state then; it was still a territory. And decided that they would try him for attempted murder, because when he tried to turn himself in, somebody in the crowd had shot the chief scout, Al Sieber, in the ankle, crippled him for life. Sieber knew that the kid had no firearms, but yet he testified at the trial that it was that the kid was responsible for shooting him. And that's what really started his outlaw career. They were trying to ship him and 8 others for various crimes to Yuma Penitentiary when they managed to overcome the sheriff and deputy who were taking him. Killed both of them, although the kid was locked in the stagecoach when it happened. And they were chased vigorously. It's been called the biggest manhunt in Arizona history.
Oh, my.
And within a year, they had gotten everybody except except Kid. And he teamed up with the famous Masai, the man who escaped from the train carrying him with the Chiricahuas to Florida, and others. And then suddenly around 1900, he vanished. He's gone.
Wow.
And there was a huge reward for him, $15,000, which in today's money is close to $500,000. And but they had to prove that the man that had been taken or was killed was actually Kid. And nobody could do it. And so I've used my imagination with great vigor to try to describe what actually happened.
It sounds like you would have had to do a lot of research for this story. Yes,
I'll tell you, it was the hardest research project that I've had, because there are 10 different stories about an event, and none of them really agree. They don't even agree on whether it was the kid's father that was murdered or his grandfather that was murdered. And there's a lot of argument that goes back and forth about it. I'm pretty sure it was his father, but there are others who would disagree with me, I'm sure.
So where this particular book now, where will this be available?
It's supposed to, the first volume is supposed to come out in June of next year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And the title of that book is?
The Chronicles of Apache Kid, Army Scout.
Okay.
Volume 1.
Okay. And what else do you have going on?
I'm working on a short story or two. And I've realized since I wrote The Apache Kid that I now have a pretty good template for what I think might have happened to the Sierra Madre Apaches, who were still raiding across the U.S. border as late as 1930. But by about 1940, they had disappeared.
Now, you graciously sent us, we received this in the mail just last week. So this is Proud Outcast. Do you want to say something about this book?
Yeah, it's what happened to Chato after he became a prisoner of war.
Okay.
And wound up marrying a 15-year-old girl as a favor to her mother, and you know, those tales get pretty interesting.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good.
Do you want to ask him about the short story in this?
Well, you read that. I haven't had a chance to read that book yet.
I know, but it's all Michael and me. We want to hear from you, Jim, too. So this is a new anthology through Western Storms, edited by Richard Prosh. And this is an amazing collection of stories. And Michael, you have one in here. Do you want to take just a moment and tell us how that all came about?
Well, I just got a note for Richard that said, I want to put together this anthology about the effects of storms on the lives of Westerners. And it just so happened that I had written a story that seemed to fit the template pretty well and sent it to him, and he decided to use it.
Well, it's terrific. Now, Michael, I'm just looking a little bit at our time. It's been so much fun to catch up with you, but we want to make sure that our listeners know where to find you and where to find your books. How do they keep in touch?
My website is wmichaelfarmer.com, and you can find my books on all of the online stores. Mm-hmm. And if I'm real lucky, you might actually find one in a bookstore.
We always hope that, don't we?
Next guest, Joni.
Well, we appreciate you kicking off this new feature in the limelight. And we're just going to ask you, Michael, please stay in touch and keep writing, and we'll catch you down the trail.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
Hi, Michael.
Thanks, Michael.
Good to see you.
We appreciate it.
Well, hello there, Joni. That was fun.
Huh? He's amazing. He's one of my favorites.
His writing and so, you know, there's just like one book coming out after another, and they're so research. You know, I don't know how all of you, we've had a number of writers like Chris Entz and others that are just able to put out this body of work, and you're one of those too, because you're doing the work and illustrating the work. And I just think that's remarkable. So
thank you so much.
So welcome now to the spotlight, Joni Franks.
Thank you.
That's a new term, right?
That might be our new term.
It used to be we called special guest.
I don't know, limelight, spotlight. I don't know. We've been kicking around a little.
It's good to be here either way.
Exactly. Well, I think Jim has a little something to share about you before we get started.
Joni Franks is an internationally award-winning author, artist, and poet. She has been named the 2024 Will Rogers Medallion Award Illustrator of the Year. Her books have earned bestseller status and have won over 50 literary honors, including the Mom's Choice Award, International Reader's Favorite Award, and the American Fiction Award. Known for her compelling narratives that challenge social norms, Frank's books are about resilience, inspiration, overcoming adversity, equality, and conversation. Spending time on a Colorado ranch with the Welsh corgis, sagebrush, gizmo, and willow offers her the inspiration to create impactful books that are changing the world one heart at a time. One heart at a time. You know, and we have a poem here. A tiny poem. Yeah, we call them quotes, but we're going to read this. This is from, this is celebrating winter solstice, and this is from the book Holly Berry and Mistletoe. We are dancing today with joy on our hearts. By the end of the day, we will be ready to start. The season will shift and there will be change, as all the earth will soon rearrange.
A bit of poetry, and I know there's I think Joni's going to share another piece of poetry from this book in a little while.
I think she is.
So, oh my goodness, there's so much to talk about, Joni. Is there something from, you know, about yourself you'd like to share that wasn't part of the bio? Anything you'd like to add?
Sure. I live in the San Luis Valley of Colorado. I live off-grid and off the beaten path. One interesting thing about where I live is I border a 90,000-acre wildlife refuge. That's sort of a unique fact. Just this morning, I was walking my dogs, and I could hear the elk bugling in the distance. So it won't be long until I see the elk migration from my living room window. Each year, there's a herd of about 800 elk that migrate to the Great Sand Dunes National Park, which is just right over there. And I get an up front, close, and personal look at that. So that's really fun. I love where I live. Most importantly, I'm an animal lover. I've had the opportunity to raise registered cattle and several different breeds of dogs. Nowadays, I don't raise any animals commercially. I just spend my time with my books and my pets.
First of all, I want to, you know, you're coming through loud and clear.
Yeah.
And you said you're off the grid, you know, we're really surprised.
Well, built a new house about 2 years ago and had the choice of going, you know, traditional electric, but I'm like at the back of a 40-acre parcel and I didn't want all the posts and poles obstructing the view. It was really the same cost to put in a great solar system as to go traditional electric. And so far, no problems. There'll be power outages in town, and I won't even really know So far, it just hums along.
Lovely.
You know, the hero, I think it's hero in your stories, is a character called Sagebrush. I think it's a corgi. You're kind of an expert on those fellows, aren't you?
Talk to us about corgis.
So corgis, a lot of people don't know that corgis are herding cattle dogs. And they have little short legs. They're very, very fast and extremely agile. And this quickness aids them usually in keeping out of the way of the cow's hooves when they're moving the cattle from one place to another. They originated in Wales, and the name Corgi means dwarf dog in Wales. They're the most loyal of companions. They're very, very intelligent. And if you're the kind of dog owner that needs a little space from your dog, then Corgis are not the dogs for you. They're always, they're not here right now, thank goodness, but they're usually under my desk when I'm working at my computer. If I get up to get some coffee or do anything, they're right there with me. Doesn't matter if they're in a sound sleep. They're just really special little animals.
You know, my sister had one and my mother had one, but most people I seem to run into have two or three or four.
Yeah, I've been blessed to have three. And I guess it's kind of like the potato chips. You can't just have
one's not enough.
They just kind of grow on you. And then, you know, if you get a puppy, what I've learned is that the puppy learns from the older dog, and that takes some of the burden off me. It helps.
Well, we know they were favorites of Queen Elizabeth. If we know nothing about corgis, and you're giving us really good lessons tonight, we know that the queen always seemed to have corgis, you know, at her heels.
She did.
Did you by chance have a relationship with her, Her Majesty?
I was blessed to have a relationship with her, and it came about very oddly. I was selling books at an event over in Westcliff, Colorado, on the other side of the mountain, and a friend of mine gifted me a book about the queen. And at that time, the only thing I knew about the queen was that she was a corgi lover. But after reading her life story, I was really impressed with her and the way that she so selflessly dedicated her life at a young age to her nation. She lived a life of service, and she wanted to make a difference in the world. And a lot of people don't know that even into her older age, she worked over 40 hours a week. And one thing that impressed me as well is, as the queen, she wouldn't entrust the task of feeding her dogs to anyone in her staff. She always fed her own dogs. So after reading this book, I was really impressed, and I thought, I think I'll write her a letter. I wrote her a letter, and I sent her three of my Corky Tale books. That was all I had at the time as a Christmas gift. And I never expected to hear back from her. But within just 3 weeks, I received royal mail from the palace. And I framed the envelope and the letter, and it's still hanging in my office to this day. And it's one of my most cherished possessions.
What a great story.
That's just such a great story. And, you know, as we read the books, we kind of, you know, thought to ourselves, I wonder who is the reader? Because as adults, we enjoyed them. So kind of, who is the reader that Joni has in mind as she's writing? And do you have any kind of a fun story about maybe a reader that you've learned about, a reader or a mom and a reader that you might like to share?
Yeah, I was. I have a Facebook fan that I knew had been collecting my books, and she reached out to me, and she was expecting her baby any day. And actually, it was her mother-in-law that reached out to me and wanted to get my fifth book as a surprise, and wanted it personalized to the new baby that was coming. And so I sent it away. And then when the baby was born, the mother sent me a picture. And there was the baby in the crib with the little corgi outfit on, book opened, signed to him. And one of the things that she had done, it was Sagebrush and the Disappearing Dark Sky was the book that she had copied the art from and painted her own canvases of my artwork and decorated her nursery. And I was so touched. And it was kind of about the same time that I thought, maybe I could do something with that art. It kind of gave me an idea because, you know, as authors, we're always focusing on the words. And of course, I focus on the art, but that's secondary. And it made me start thinking along those lines, but it was such a touching story.
Yeah. Well, you say, you know, changing hearts one at a time. And that's just those two examples, the queen and this mom and child, are just two wonderful examples of what must be going on with everyone who interacts with you, Joni.
It means so much to me. It's amazing. It's amazing where these little books have taken me and the people I've met. It's been a true blessing.
Yeah. We're going to take a very short break. And then when we come back, Joni's actually going to read something for us. And let's see. First, though, we are going to, we're going to just take a short break. We're going to step away and hear a place where you can find all of the books of all of our guests on Rendezvous with a Writer. And that is our Outwest Shop affiliate bookshop ad. So don't go away, because when we come back, there's more with Joni. We'll be right back. Story is everything. Find a great one on Outwest Shop's bookshop. Go to outwestshop.com, find books and CDs on the menu, choose Shop Outwest on bookshop.org. Browse through featured authors on Rendezvous with a Writer. Explore curated book lists and our featured picks. Add in note cards, calendars, and jigsaw puzzles. One-stop shopping for great gifts. Use the search box to find thousands more titles. Make the switch. Your purchase supports us as independent booksellers. That's our story.
Welcome back to Rendezvous with a Writer. Special guest, Joni Franks. He's in the spotlight. So I think you're going to read a little poem?
Sure, I'd love to. So this is a poem that I wrote for Holly Berry and Mistletoe. And this is about keeping hope in your heart during challenging times. And it's the opening poem for the book. When better days seem far away, when the light won't come and the darkness stays, believe in yourself and keep hope in your heart. These times will pass. They've played their part. One cycle begins and a different one ends. Soon you will feel hopeful again.
That's a great poem. You know, actually, that I was going to read that myself, and Bob said, no. Joni's reading that one.
There's another good one, Jim. Go find another good one.
You know, before we get into the book, let me ask a quick question about you're an illustrator. You know, we're talking about you being an author, but you're definitely an illustrator, and you're getting a reward for it. When did you get into the art business? When did you get art training? Were you natural? Did you have any training? And how long have you been doing this kind of thing?
I've been doing this 8 years, but no training either as an author or a artist. I retired from business 8 years ago after a lifelong career, and I decided to write books about things that were close to my heart, themes that interested me. And so I wrote books and illustrated books about equality, bullying, labeling, environmental conservation. And I thought it was important to show the pictures in the way that I saw them. We're all different. And if I had given you my book or anyone in my book, they would have seen it in a completely different way. Mm-hmm. So in order to stay true to my words and true to what the images that I wanted to convey, I did it myself.
Very good. Did you do any writing before you started your books?
No, I was in business my whole life. I ran insurance agencies. I owned them. I ran them. When I was younger, I worked in transportation, and I called on manufacturing facilities and moved freight all over the world by truck. Back in the 90s, when there were only three women doing that in the country and for the company that I work for. So I was always in business, and it wasn't until I left that, and for the first time in my life, I wasn't working, and I sat down and thought, what am I going to do? And so I started to paint, but the painting I did was painting glass, and that was fun. And then I just sat down in my covered porch. I was living in Howard, Colorado, in my cabin, and I wrote a book, or a story. It was really a story. I didn't set out to be an author. At that time, it was just a story about me and my little dog, Sagebrush, and our Colorado adventure together. And that book had the theme, that was my first book, and it had the theme of equality and bullying.
Yeah.
And I read it and people cried, and then I made it into a book. So I did, and it took off.
The book that we're going to, the first book, just depending on time, we want to make sure that this, that we spend time with this one,
right,
which is Holly Berry, as we said, and Mistletoe. And one of the fun things about this book, and I'm just going to open it to Sprig. Now, I did not know that corgis and fairies have a long history together.
They do have a long history together. They're known as the enchanted dog of the fairies or the fae. They have that folk tale.
Yeah, so that was very fun. I think we actually had some conversation with my brother-in-law, who seemed to know all about corgis and fairies, and was surprised that we did not know.
I didn't know either until I was like at this event, and this man came running out of nowhere and said, I was with Sage, and he's like, "You know, the fairies rode on their backs," and I'm like,
"Oh, yes, and into battle." From what I was reading on some of the links that my brother-in-law Tom started texting me, like, "Check this out and check this out," and you know.
Well, you did a very nice job of weaving that into the story there. The fairies riding.
Yes.
Riding sagebrush.
Yes. So, why don't you tell us a little bit about this story and how this came to you, and tell us whatever you'd like about this story.
So I'd always wanted to have a Christmas book for my Quirky Tale series, but nothing had really come to me that pertained to Christmas and that sort of thing. So I found myself, I had injured my knee and was completely debilitated, housebound, walking down two or three stairs was just like major concentration. It was huge. And it went on for quite a while. And I began to worry about my recovery, and was I going to recover, and was it happening as quickly as I expected it to? But when I did recover, I decided to take that story and make a Christmas book out of it. Mm-hmm. And so in the story, Holly Berry and Mistletoe, young Miss is the ranch woman, and she has suffered an injury, and she has just moved the cattle down from the high country for the winter. And she's very relieved because she's now injured. And so she's very thankful that task got done because it's just her and her dog Sagebrush. But she begins to fret about it and she's kind of consumed with it. Mm-hmm. And so I decided that would be a good Christmas story because miracles can happen anywhere. And particularly at Christmas time. So that was the first thoughts of making it into a Christmas book and into this book.
Mm-hmm. So do you want to talk characters just for a moment?
Characters,
She told us a little bit about young Miss.
Yeah, you know, Miss, she's a pretty resourceful lady.
She is. Yeah. In the first book, she wants to be a rancher, but the old Mr. and Mrs. who own the ranch are telling her she can't possibly do it because she's a woman.
Right.
And, she just disproves the disbeliever. So she is resourceful.
And then we have the introduction of the corgi puppies.
Yes.
Who the book is named for. So tell us a little bit about who these little puppies are.
So they're a part of the Christmas miracle. They appear in the barn on Christmas morning. Young Miss is starting to feel better, but she's not completely recovered. And she goes to the barn and she opens the stall door and there are two little puppies. And she's thinking, you know, they're not mine. You know, whose are they? So anyway, through one of the little people called the Shuns, he tells her, you know, they're for you. It's a Christmas miracle. And she entrusts Sagebrush to name them. They're going to stay. And Sagebrush is thinking quite, you know, diligently about this. She's taking it very seriously. What should I name my new brother and sister? So she comes up with the names Holly Berry and Mistletoe. And so there's significance in that Holly Berry is considered holy. It's considered a holy plant because it stays green all year and bears red berries in winter. And then mistletoe is known as a all-healing plant because it grows suspended from the trees between heaven and earth. So together, it means holy healing. So that's the significance of holly berry and mistletoe and the names of the little puppies who are the Christmas miracles.
Yes. Do you want to ask your favorite question before we go to a break? Or do you want to save it for when we come back?
No. Do any of your characters ever surprise you?
What's that?
Any of your characters ever surprise you?
No. I put a lot of thought into their names.
Yeah.
And no, I pretty well know what direction they're going.
All right.
We are gonna take another short break, and then when we come back, we're gonna see if we can cover a little bit about two other books. And so we're gonna just step away and hear a word from our wonderful sponsors, Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison. They are sponsors for Rendezvous with a Writer. And if you are a writer, find out what they can do for you. And we're going to be right back with Joni in just a moment. Rendezvous with a Writer is sponsored by Blue Cottage Agency and Clicks by Madison, your author publicity and book marketing team. Experienced, trusted, effective. Contact them today at bluecottageagency.com.
Welcome back. Welcome back to Money with a Writer. We're talking with our guest, Joni, about children's books.
Which are also for adults. They're for everyone.
Actually, you know, adults can read those, enjoy the books. There's no doubt about that.
Yes, yes, absolutely. There are lessons that we can all take away from each one. So let's talk for a moment. I think this one was just released in August, Joni. The Sagebrush and the Never Summer Mountains. Is this a new one?
It's pretty new. I think that is like the fifth book or sixth. Maybe it's the seventh book in the series.
Okay.
Regardless. that one was inspired. I was on a four-wheel drive adventure in the mountains up by Tin Cup Pass in Colorado. And I saw up close and personal a landslide. And I was on a forest road in a four-wheel drive. And literally the landslide had started down such a force and come across the forest road, it had shoved it up on the other side of the mountain. So I just couldn't get that image out of my mind. So
yeah, imagine.
I decided I would write a book about Sagebrush and the Never Summer Mountains. Yeah. And in this book, Sagebrush travels with her companions through Stormy Pass and the Never Summer Mountains to clear a colossal landslide that has blocked Rose Creek, and the Shuns have their water source compromised. Mm-hmm. There's an adventure and a mission that has to be taken care of.
Who are the Shuns?
Well, the Shuns are the little people that I write about. I was encouraged to make Corky Tales into a series. I was pretty terrified because I thought, what will I write about? So I decided to write about these little people called the Shuns that I had dreamed about many years ago. And they came to me in a dream when I was building a house, a piece of property that had never been lived on. And so I started to have this reoccurring dream about these little people. They were 6 inches tall and they lived in the hollowed out trees on this property where the house was to be built. And they were covered in wood dust and they were very shy, because they had been shunned by society and by humans for their reverence for Mother Earth. So I thought, well, that's the only thing I know to write about, so I'll write about them. And it's been good.
Yeah. They're delightful.
That's a great story.
They're delightful, and they have such fun names. Like we have Cloverleaf, and then he falls in love with Firefly.
And when I use those, my character names, I try to have some significance. So Cloverleaf is a young male shun, and his mother named him Cloverleaf after the three leaves of a clover, which means faith, love, and hope. And Cloverleaf has to keep a lot of faith, love, and hope in his heart because his mother is suffering from the blue flu, and nobody knows what causes the blue flu or how long it will last. And then he meets Firefly, who is a young shun girl, and she's as quick as the firefly that she is named for. And sometimes she emits a soft yellow glow.
It's so fun. I know. And in Holly Berry, I think we had, we met, well, no, they're in, where am I getting confused? We have Juniper Berry, and we had, of course, Shrum and his son Sprout. And the Pine Tree Brothers.
Those Pine Tree Brothers. They're from, I actually brought some of the characters from previous books back into the Christmas book, Holly Berry and Mistletoe. So the Pine Tree Brothers actually have a book of their own. It's Sagebrush and the Warm Springs Discovery, and they live in the Warm Springs. And they are Pine Needle and Knotty Pine. Then they have their friend Cedar Pollen, who suffers from cedar fever. And part of that story is that he gathers the water from the Warm Springs to make pine-sickle tea. That's the only thing that will cure his cedar fever.
So creative, Joni. So creative. And every book, as you mentioned in the beginning about changing hearts, has a few lessons that you are very subtle and deft with. Yeah. But we enjoyed minding what would those lessons be? And in the Never Summer Mountains, we found a couple. Do you have a lesson you'd like to just point out from Never Summer Mountains?
For the Never Summer Mountains, there's a few lessons. Belittling, not to belittle. The value of teamwork, and not to make judgments based on appearance.
Mm-hmm. And we had, we probably won't have much time to get into it, but we have a third book here, Sagebrush Meets the Shuns. And this was inspired also by another experience that you had, I believe.
That's the first book that I wrote about the shuns. And it might be interesting to note that when I did build the house on that piece of property, I made sure I didn't take down one tree on that home site. But the story of the shuns is I was in one of my favorite forests in Colorado, and I came upon an area that had been clear cut, and it was so shocking to me. And it really affected me. And so I couldn't help but wonder and mourn all the animals that had lost their homes. And then I grieved for and wondered about the other creatures that maybe had once called that place home.
And this is an illustration of...
You're right, that image, that's kind of a stark image. You go, you used to see a lot of trees, and all of a sudden you see stumps.
Yeah.
That is a little jarring. But you gotta wonder... Did anybody plant trees again, or did we just cut some down?
It was, and I didn't expect it. It was, it was really a slash, and just had slashed, and it was just devastated. There was nothing left, and I don't believe there were any things going on to try to regenerate that area at all. But in that illustrations, the Shun, Shroom, and Sprout have lost their home, and every time they go to a new home, it's cut down by the tree cutting machines. And when Sagebrush discovers them in the forest, they're living in a pile of leaves. And so they have a real need and a real want to find their forever home. So there's a homelessness message in there as well.
Mm-hmm. But luckily, they find.
Luckily, Young Miss saves the day.
Young Miss saves the day.
Actually, Shroom and Sprout don't want to go anywhere near the humans. They're terrified. And but Sagebrush takes them anyway, and they arrive, and Young Miss offers them their own tree hollow on her property, and they're quite happy. And then as time goes on, that develops into an entire village.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Oh, how fun. What are you working on next?
Well, in 2025, there'll be 3 Corky Tail books released. There'll be one coming out in April, one in June, and one in August. So we can look for 3 Corky Tail books to be released in 2025. So the adventure continues. I have a new little puppy, Willow. She's only 8 months old. But there have been a few poems that have come to me already. And there are some characters that I have pictures of around my office. And I've written a few words about that. I don't exactly know what they're going to do yet, but it's going to be exciting.
I assume writing stories is pretty fun.
It's so fun. It's the most important and fun thing I've ever done in my life. I love it. I mean, I can lose lots of time, and I write my stories out by hand. I usually like to sit in front of the fireplace.
Okay.
Most of my writing in the winter, and we have pretty long winter here in the San Luis Valley, and that's okay because I enjoy that time. You know, it's nice to do that and to have that gift of that time. And so, yeah, that's when I'm at my happiest, is when I'm writing those stories.
Do you have in your mind, you know, ideas of several other books that are going to come down the
I do, because there will be altogether 6 new Corky Tail books coming out. So, yeah, I have some ideas. Some of them are about, one of them is going to be about vanishing wetlands, which is something that's very close to where I live here. There might be some horses coming up soon, maybe some more.
Very good. So, where can people find you? And I think it sounds like you have a new relationship with a publisher too.
I do. I self-published 14 books in 8 years, and last year I signed a contract with Ronan Weatherford Publishing. I'm working with Amy Cowan under the Young Dragon imprint. And so they are re-releasing 9 Corky Tail books, and that's where the 6 new ones will come into play. I have a new contract this month for, I have another book series called The Crooked Forest, and they're picking that up as well. I don't know exactly the details of when that will be coming out, but that is a fantasy trilogy where my other little dog, Gizmo, is the canine hero.
They look so fun. I was like, I think I'm gonna need to read those too.
Really, I wanted to make a companion book series, so for a slightly older audience, where I could address themes for a more grown-up audience. And these are about broken hearts, forgiveness, and fresh starts.
Wonderful, Joni. Where can people find you and find your books?
People can find me on my website at JoniFranks.com. All the books are available online at Amazon and Barnes & Noble. And they can also follow me on social media through my Facebook page, LinkedIn, and Instagram.
Busy woman. Busy woman. Yeah. Well, Jim, I think you have a quote.
Oh, yeah, one more short quote. Yeah, this is from a 2015 article in the Vanity Fair magazine that's about the late Queen Elizabeth, and she is quoted, the only quote in the whole article, by the way, "My corgis are family."
Absolutely. They're my children. They are. They're my kids.
Don't forget, you can hear tonight's episode, which is number 104, with W. Michael Farmer and Joni Franks, and all of our interviews on your favorite podcast platforms like Spotify and Amazon Music, LA Talk Radio, never miss a show if you follow us on Podbean. Next week, we kick off In the Limelight. We will have Henry Park, who actually has been with us the first Thursday of every month, and we just didn't know he was in the limelight. He's the author of this wonderful book, The Greatest Westerns Ever Made and the People Who Made Them, and he is the film editor for True West Magazine, so he will catch us up on everything happening in Western film and TV. And then our featured guest is Bill Markley. And we met Bill this summer at a conference, the WWA conference, and we'll be talking about the book Wild Bill Hickok and Buffalo Bill Cody, Plainsmen of the Legendary West. And we have a lot of reading to do to get ready for this.
We do.
It's going to be just great. Joni, and also to Michael, thank you so much for being with us tonight.
It was a lot of fun.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Jim, do you have a closing comment?
As always, it's always a great day out west.
Keep writing and we'll keep reading. We'll see you next week.
Thanks, Joni.
Bye, Joni.